especially after COVID. A lot of companies just go after growth, and then now you see the repercussions of those companies. It's difficult for them to even survive. Many of them just don't get the market size right, and that's when, you know, things kind of go south. But if you get the product right and your assessment of market right, and then I think it's a steady path. A CFO function being a fiduciary function, I would say, plays a much more important role. It's not just oiling the engine. You need to also apply brakes wherever you need to. Otherwise, the organization can just slide away, right? Artificial intelligence is coming. You just can't stop it. But at the same time, you act like a bridge between the data, the accounting, all the other facets of finance and the business. And that's the CFO function that I see in future.
Hey, welcome to the first episode of Copa Talks, the CFO podcast brought to you by Blue Copa. Here, we bring you unfiltered access to conversations with veteran finance leaders covering key milestones and challenges in their journey through stories. Have you wondered what happens behind the scenes of building a profitable business, or how to find the right CFO for your organization, or how to groom young leaders into tomorrow's CFO? Then this episode will strike the right chord. Meet Girish, the India CFO at Varian Medical Systems. With almost 2 decades of experience and leadership roles at PwC, Dell and HP Enterprise, Girish is a revered finance leader in the Indian CFO community. Girish brings a lot of wisdom to the conversation today. So without any delay, let's get into the chat.
Hey Girish, so glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Guru. Happy to be part of Copa Talks.
Yeah. How about we start with you? Can you take us through your early days, your entry into finance, and perhaps the journey since then?
Sure. Probably I'll go back a little bit longer in time. I, like in many households in India or much more in South India, you know, most of the kids take science as just a preferred subject. And I too did that for my 11th and 12th. I kind of landed up with an engineering college seat, but I was really not so happy to go with science. And that's when I started, in that short period of time, I started thinking about, you know, other options. And I happened to meet my cousin, who is also a chartered accountant, a senior chartered accountant. Then I found it very interesting as he started explaining the world of finance. And that's how my journey started early. And after my CA, started off my career with Pricewaterhouse into statutory audits. I did that for about 5 years. And then I got an opportunity to get into the industry through Dell. Fantastic organization, great institution, I would say, in terms of learning. I got an opportunity to explore various roles, right from accounting, internal audit, FP&A, and then business finance. So as I grew, I did it over the seven and a half years. And after that, I got an opportunity to get into Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. I started off my journey there as head of finance for services business. A couple of years down the line, I was promoted to be the India CFO, handling a P&L of close to $600 million. Very, very complex, B2B, segment, but, across products, services, software, it was a great learning for 3 years. And then now I'm CFO for Varian Medical Systems. Varian is into the field of oncology. We make products, radiotherapy equipment, treating cancer patients. The motto of our company is to create a world without fear of cancer, and that's the vision that we have. So I'm thoroughly enjoying this role, while spearheading finance, there is also a mission that we are after. Absolutely. And that kind of gives a dual happiness.
Got it. ever since you were answering this, there's been just one question on top of my mind. How did you go about convincing your family that you're picking the third option? There's science, there's medicine, or this, technology, and there's medicine, and there's commerce, which is the third option. You ended up doing science. How did you even convince your family saying that, you know, I'm actually going into the world of commerce? It's if there's anything that people could learn from today, it's going to be this convincing part as well.
Yeah, it was tough. It was the mindset those days was that if you are taking up anything other than science, you're kind of a dull head. But that was the perception. But my parents, luckily, they supported me quite a bit. They knew that I was pretty serious about what I wanted to do, and they just believed in me and said, just do whatever brings you happiness. And that was easy with parents, but not so much with the outside world. But over a period of time, as you convince yourself and then start making it happen, then it kind of falls in place.
Got it. I think it's a happy ending now. You've done really well for yourself.
Still a long way to go. Still a long way, I would say.
Casually throwing out the accolades and the sort of responsibilities that you held at $600 million and so on, I think your family must be extremely proud of it.
Yeah.
All right. So the people that we've spoken to, especially the ones who have either worked with you or interacted with you, often associate with you a couple of words or keywords to call it. Someone who has a profitability mindset, a winning mindset, who knows how to win and has an extreme bias to execution. So we're discussing more towards that today. I want the unfiltered insights about that from Girish. Starting with, why does one need to have a profitability mindset?
I think, it's I would simplify it more than making it complex. Every business has to make money, right? A balance sheet and P&L kind of go together hand in hand. You need to be profitable and then you make money, right? But at the same time, it's not easy to start a business and be making money right from day one or be profitable right from day one. You need that support. You need that cash. You need to make those investments into product, into marketing, brand building, so on and so forth. And then, slowly and steadily, you need to get to that level of profitability. I think that's where, you see a lot of debate these days, right? Especially after COVID, a lot of companies just go after growth. And then now you see the repercussions of those companies. It's difficult for them to even survive. And that's what happens. It's a no-brainer. You can't manage it over a long run.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think post-COVID, the emphasis on profitability has shortened up so much. In marketing language, I think it's one of the trending words today. Companies really need to look at profitability.
Absolutely.
Following that with, how does one overcome the challenges, and what do you think are the challenges with building such a mindset?
I think I would say the challenges are within the organization as well as external, right? Mm-hmm. Internal to an organization, you need to bring that consensus. You need to make people aware of the the pros and cons of both, right? So how do you start? And that's the strategy you need to build short-term and long-term. Mm-hmm. And then from an external point of view, you always have competition. And ultimately, it's how your product performs, how your product is premium to other products, and how we are able to get the right pricing out of it. And also services, right? You have product and services, which kind of go hand in hand. Product brings you immediate revenue, and then services and all the attach that goes along with it brings you long-term revenue as well as profitability. So I think these are the two facets that one needs to take care. Internal alignment, that is very challenging. And then you have competition from outside. you need to have a right mix, you know, right set of this thing to strategy to manage both the challenges.
Got it. And you've been advising a lot of CFOs or a lot of startups, in fact, in terms of their finance, you know, operations, their strategy and everything. Quickly answering this, how easy or how difficult is it to build a profitable business today as to 20 years ago?
I think it is, you know, business has changed. The framework of business has changed quite a bit, right? You know, 20 years ago, it was mostly B2B. And now if you see, there is a lot of traction in the B2C segment, especially in the last one decade or 1.5 decades, right? So that's the challenge, you know. B2B has a different strategy to go after, and B2C is different. You need to burn cash initially, and it's also very, very fast moving, right? So that's where you know, I do interact with a few startups and founders, and caution, go with caution, get your product right and the market sizing right. Many of them just don't get the market size right, and that's when, you know, things kind of go south. But if you get the product right and your assessment of market right, and then I think it's a steady path. You just cannot, if you are able to sustain your cash and still achieve these objectives of product penetration and the right sizing of market, I think you are up for a long run.
Got it. One of the common things that I've been noticing with between B2B or the difference being B2B has always been a high margin business, and B2C has been comparatively lower margin business, right? And volume. Here the need for, because it's a volume game, absolutely. Right. So the need to be profitable is immense, is you know, essential, mandatory.
Yeah.
So this 15 years, the B2C era being, you know, having grown up, what do you think companies should do specifically just for these B2B segments in a checklist of 1, 2, 3 items to be more profitable?
I think, you know, I think I kind of said that already, but internally, you need to work very closely with your business, business leaders. It is not just talking about it constantly, but also you need to back it up with data, right? Only when you show the mirror of how you are doing with data, that's when it strikes the right mindset.
Got it.
With data and the tools that are available, plenty of tools available nowadays, you know, especially Power BI and the tools that you guys are making at BlueCopa, you know, fantastic dashboards coming out. That's the only way to keep reiterating that, you know, this is where we are. Cut and slice the segments, be it the product segment or the customer segment. You get the you know, a right area to go after, right? And that's when you can move the needle. As I've been saying, you know, CFO plays the role of a strategist nowadays rather than just closing the books building the P&L, it is more of giving the direction to the business, and that's very critical. And you have to keep doing that day in and day out.
Great segue. I was just getting to it next. CFOs of today are expected to have a tremendous metamorphosis in terms of how they operate, in terms of what skills they acquire, and everything. So for a CFO of today or tomorrow, what do you suggest them to acquire in terms of skill sets to be someone successful or better? What's a winning CFO looking like?
I would say, you know, fundamental is you need to know how to read a balance sheet and a P&L, right? You know, that comes from your degree. That's a trait that cannot be compromised. And then as you get into the real world, that's when you build the other traits of communication and inclusiveness. You can't just work in silos. You need to take people along, right? And this is another big trait. And of course, honesty and integrity, that's like it cuts across everywhere, right? And, yeah. And a CFO function being a fiduciary function, I would say plays a much more important role. It's not just oiling the engine. You need to also apply brakes wherever you need to. Otherwise, the organization can just slide away. People can do crazy stuff, but you need to keep the people honest. And as I said, the strategic mindset is a given now. You need to have that transparency and this thing to show how the business is doing and keep guiding the teams along and say that these are the segments, these are the areas that need to have special focus. Keep the balance sheet clean, collect money, keep the cash flow right. All the things that a CFO has to do, has to come together and keep the broad mindset, right? And then not just be, focused on one particular area.
Got it. I think this broad mindset seems very interesting. Can you zoom in a little on that? Do you recommend them having a lot of experience across the breadth of finance?
So I would say twofold answer, right? One is experience brings these traits out. And personally, as I started off, this discussion, I had the privilege of working in different roles in the beginning. That is one way to broaden your horizon, be it accounting or corporate audit or tax or various functions within finance, treasury, then you get a whole rounded approach and you understand in depth what a role each of those roles, give. But yeah, not everyone is fortunate to get this kind of exposure. That's when experienced individuals go into MBA institutes. Nowadays, yeah. Fantastic courses are being offered get this kind of perspective and also to get an outside-in perspective. And also, the third point I would say is if one can get an opportunity to work in business or operations or a non-finance role, it will play a significant role in kind of reshaping your career, I would say. And I would say personally, my corporate audit role at Dell was really a non-finance role. It's slightly different from the traditional internal audit function that many organizations have. So I worked with various business leaders and after coming back from that role, my perspective about finance completely changed. So I think these are some of the things that a growing finance professional can keep in mind. Will augur well when he or she becomes a CFO, right? All of this will help.
Got it. So when someone takes up this business responsibilities, operational responsibilities, what do you think that they acquire is something that's going to help them back in the finance role? Any specific things that come to mind?
I think, it just broadens the way you think. You have a very finance-oriented thinking and questioning and always, posing questions. There in business, you just can't, you're in front of the customers, you're in front of this thing. So customers are extremely demanding and so are the other functions. If you are in an operations role, you're kind of caught in between various functions, right? You are in the thick of it. You're in the action thing, right? So that's the different perspective you get, right? Why one needs to provide solution rather than just, ask questions, right? It's easy to ask questions, but have a solution-oriented mindset. And then it's completely different.
Yeah. Gotcha. That's a good one. Good. Over the years, you've nurtured a lot of CFOs as well. You've not nurtured a lot of finance leaders who ended up becoming CFOs. How do you spot a potentially good CFO for an organization?
I more than a CFO, I think that would be a stretch. I would say, I would always look for the right attitude. Somebody, you know, somebody who has a good education background, whether it is a CA or a MBA, coming from a good institution, will have the basics right. But I think right attitude and who is courageous to express his or her views. You know, as I said, finance is one function where you're expected to provide insights, not just from business point of view, but also, you know, keep the house clean, so to speak, right? So that is very, very critical. You know, you need to spot the areas where things are looking very bleak and then come back and highlight this to the management and say that, hey, you know, something is off here. I think this is where we probably need to focus a bit more on controls, building controls, processes. All these are very, very critical, and that comes from the team. It cannot just happen sitting in the CFO's desk, right? These things, identifying weaknesses, identifying where we need to improve, working very closely with the auditors, working very closely with the internal audit teams, tax teams. So that's when you kind of you need to have that right attitude to work with various people, and then have that you know, winning mindset comes. That is very, very critical for me, and that's what I've been always pushing people to have that. And then, you know, I think you always end up with success. There is no doubt about it.
Got it. All right. Pick your choice. Externally hire a CFO for a mission, or internally elevate a finance leader to CFO?
I think it's a tough one. I would say the right thing to do is to promote internally. You know, because somebody who has spent a lot of time within the organization has to be rewarded. Who has done right, you know, who has done all the things, ticked all the boxes. It's always good. There is a lot of acceptability within the organization. But the only downside, but I will pick up the other one. If you get an external CFO, you get a fresh perspective, freshness to the whole thing. May not be found acceptable immediately, but as he or she gains ground, then, you know, you could see some drastic changes happening. But I would say there is no right or wrong answer, but I would still prefer to bring up somebody from, you know, climbing up the ladder. But if that is missing and somebody is not ready to take that role, I think external is fine. But yeah, that's a tough choice, I would say.
Got it. Just validating one of my assumptions here. Does time to ramp up or time to get started with the mission play a huge role here when picking your choice as someone internal opposed to an external?
Absolutely. Time is of the essence, right? You know, the other side to look at it is, I think I'll touch upon, if there is a CFO who has, CEO who has resigned, or there is a gap, the CFO's role is so critical that he invariably takes that role for that, you know, that gap of time, right? So that's how critical the CFO role has become. And if there is no CFO, CEO functions without, I would say, a right hand. Right hand is missing. It's as critical as that. And that's how time becomes the essence. And you see, you know, somebody who is playing the role of an interim CFO, or even nowadays you get somebody as a virtual CFO from outside, those opportunities are coming in to fill in that time period. But I would say it would be a bit chaotic to kind of manage. And hence it is very important to hire somebody very quickly, get somebody within the system, or get somebody from outside very quickly.
Got it. You've just opened up a Pandora's box now. CFOs transitioning into CEOs. I just have a ton of questions. Let me start with the first one. Do you think that's a trend that's going to happen from now? Are you of the belief that more CFOs will end up becoming CEOs?
I think may not be naturally. I think it's something that, you know, if you are a seasoned CFO and you've been working with the business for a long period of time, I think a day will come when you feel, okay, you know, I've been doing this. Now I've seen so much of business. And if the product is something that is that the CFO can think of selling, why not get into the shoes of a managing director or a CEO? And if you're able to understand the product better and this thing, why not, right? You know, you have almost all the other things right. And, you know, I go and visit the customers along with my CEO, right, many times. And so you kind of get that intuition. But it's a tough choice again. Two different roles. Many CFOs have done really well in the role of CEOs nowadays. But that trend is picking up. As I said, it's just that you have to trust your intuition and then jump into it and not look back. it's tough to look back once you get into that. Yeah. Right.
I think the experience with business and operations, like you mentioned about a couple of minutes earlier, adds a lot of value to this CEO absolutely. Role.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Got it. Perfect. All right. Now we are into a segment where I want to understand more about the future of finance. So what's your bullish take or prediction for finance in the next 5 years?
So extremely bullish. I would say, the field is fast changing. There are many areas that are getting automated within the field of finance, being mundane operations like accounts receivable, accounts payable, the payments or the booking of invoices. You would have seen a lot of automation happening. And so that's when the becomes like a knowledge game, right? So how do you use your knowledge to up the game? Use analytics. End of the day, you have all the data, and what do you do with that? Right? Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence is coming. You just can't stop it. But at the same time, you act like a bridge between the data, the accounting, all the other facets of finance and the business. And that's the CFO function that I see in future, right? You will probably see the size coming down a little bit, but it will still play a major role. But with that, you might ask, will the number of opportunities come down? No, because the number of businesses will just multiply, right? And we are seeing that already. So the number of finance professionals in a particular organizations may come down, but on the overall horizon, if you see the number of businesses that are just multiplying is just crazy. So I would say the opportunities are only plenty.
Got it. I think that's a very well put response. AI is not here to replace you in technical terms. You're just going to get elevated with the AI. There's plenty out there. Just go and try it out. Perfect.
Yeah.
A follow-up, since you mentioned AI, I think today's conversation, there's no way you can talk about future and not mention AI. So how's Varian leveraging AI, especially in the space of finance?
As I said, tools are just getting built, and we are seeing the data that is coming out. I think right now we are relying more on Power BI tools, and since it is B2B, the data sets are constrained. I would say B2C, there is a more play that is happening in terms of artificial intelligence that I'm seeing. I mentor a few companies in terms of startups. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of potential of AI in the B2C segment, and kudos to you guys as well. Blue Copa is building a fantastic tool, and I had the opportunity to just have a glimpse of the tool, and that's the wonderful thing that AI can bring in. More data, more analysis, more intelligence comes in, and then better decision making.
Absolutely. That's very reassuring. Thank you, Girish. All right. So those were the things that I really wanted to understand from you. thank you very much for joining us on the show and sharing your valuable insights, Girish. Thank you.